Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case is 2019-187, State of Ohio versus Seante Jones. For the appellant, Mr. Hoffman.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Chief Justice O'Connor, Justices of the Supreme Court, Mr. Havlin. I represent Seante Jones, and I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please. Justice Scalia observed that the Sixth Amendment requirement of an impartial jury impliedly compels peremptory challenges. Because of the constitutional importance of peremptory challenges, this morning I'm asking the court to hold that when the state is permitted to exercise more than its allotted number of peremptory challenges in a criminal prosecution, the error constitutes structural error, requiring automatic reversal. The constitutional right to an unbiased jury is implicated in that situation because the state is given an unfair advantage in shaping the jury. And the prejudice from that advantage cannot be measured. The nature of the violation is in the imbalance of peremptory challenges, and that imbalance was skewed in this case in favor of the state.
Doesn't a structural error have to? I'm sorry, Mr. Hoffman, over here. Doesn't a structural error have to be a constitutional error?
Yes, a structural error is.
But don't we know from the U.S. Supreme Court that this is not a constitutional error?
No, that's not true, Your Honor. This particular situation involves it impinges upon the right to a jury and also due process in this case.
But there's no right to peremptory challenges, right?
Well, under State versus Greer, this court held that there's no constitutional right to peremptory challenges. But in this case, in our state and in every state, there's a criminal rule that provides for the allotment of peremptory challenges. And it's to be evenly divided between the parties. Each party is to get the same number of peremptory challenges. So the implementation of the right under the rule has been affected, and therefore it affects the right to a jury.
Right, but so the right comes from the rule, not the Constitution, right? So
the right has been provided through the rule, but it's to implement the right to a fair trial. It's the right to a jury under the Sixth Amendment and under the Ohio Constitution.
Well, yes. Isn't that contrary then to adopt that view, we'd have to overturn State v. Greer. If we're proceeding on federal constitutional grounds, we'd have to say the U.S. Supreme Court got Rivera wrong, wouldn't we?
It wouldn't be necessary to change Greer because Greer didn't involve the unequal allotment of peremptory challenges. There was no imbalance in Greer. There was just a disagreement as to how many to afford.
In State v. Murphy, didn't we write, quote, a juror's erroneous excusal does not compromise the jury's impartiality, close quote? Wasn't that our holding in Murphy?
I can't tell you right now. I'm not familiar
well,
I'm
reading from it. So
okay, I believe
2001. So how does the excusal of this one juror impinge upon the impartiality listed in the state constitution?
Well, there are many ways to create or have an imbalance in peremptory challenges.
But this person was erroneously excused, right? The person who was knocked off by the peremptory?
Well, that's the use of a peremptory challenge. That's not the loss of one. So in this case, you have a direct, not an indirect imbalance. The state was directly afforded an additional peremptory challenge. This wasn't some indirect claim that they got an extra peremptory, say, because they made a challenge for cause that should have been denied but was granted.
Counsel, did the defendant receive all the peremptory challenges that they were entitled to?
Yes, they exhausted.
They exhausted their peremptory challenges.
That is correct.
Did they ask for an additional peremptory challenge when the state exercised it, when it did? But the state hadn't exhausted all its peremptory challenges, right?
The state had exhausted all their peremptory challenges. The defense exhausted theirs. And in this, the context of the error didn't call for the affording an additional peremptory to the defense, because the mistake was made under the misapprehension that the
state had one left?
Was owed one. And so they thought they were making it even, and they didn't.
Counsel, you know, when advocates are making peremptory challenges, oftentimes they're acting on a hunch. That hunch could be right or wrong, right?
That is correct.
And the defense in this case, this particular juror that made it on, there had passed for cause, right, from the defense perspective?
That's right. The juror that made it on was even seated as an alternate, and
okay.
He kind of just changed seats.
Right, so when you're talking about structural error, like things like a biased trial court judge or something like that, where's the equivalence of it? I know both sides concede a mistake was made here, but where's the prejudice with this particular juror?
Well, that's the very point of structural error. You can't measure it. The measuring stick's been taken away. You can't measure whether something doesn't add up to what it needs to be. And jurors can pass for cause and have all kinds of preconceived notions. When attorneys talk to jurors after a trial, it's sometimes the things they say are bizarre. Peremptory challenges are the only way to detect juror bias and eliminate it. So they need to be preserved.
Did this juror, it was really the alleged inconsistency occurred during picking of alternate jurors, right? It was during the alternate juror time frame, yes?
Yes.
And then that person became an alternate juror, yes?
Yes.
Did that alternate juror make it into the jury room?
Yes, because he became
a full-fledged juror.
The actual panel.
Okay.
And it happened after they agreed to the composition of this jury.
Both sides said they were satisfied.
That's right. They weren't sworn yet, but, I mean, this was a reconstituted jury that heard all the evidence and rendered a verdict against my client. And it's the imbalance, it's the reconstituted jury that's the fault.
Well, counsel, this juror was accepted as an alternate. Is that correct?
Correct.
So he or she was satisfactory to both sides?
That's right. There was a voir dire.
So he's an alternate juror, and then the state says, I got another peremptory, and I'm going to bump whatever the juror was in the first set jury.
That
right?
is correct.
Okay. So that person presumably was acceptable to both when that person was seated, right?
The one that was bumped. That is correct.
Okay. So you're exchanging someone who initially was acceptable to both with someone else who's acceptable to both.
That is correct.
Okay, I'm still trying to figure out where the detriment is to your client when the defense agreed that this alternate juror, somebody could have had a heart attack, and this juror, substitutes, and we wouldn't be here.
I don't know how else to say it, Judge. Structural error doesn't call for prejudice.
But what if we disagree with you about that? Let's assume for the moment that we disagree with that. So then how would you answer the Chief's question? Where is the prejudice? If we say this is not structural error, do you have prejudice that you can show?
I don't. I have demonstrable prejudice.
You do? I'm sorry.
I do not.
You do not.
I cannot prove prejudice.
Okay. I appreciate your direct answer.
Thank you. So the error in this case is permitting the state to exercise an additional peremptory challenge. It was structural error, and it rendered the trial fundamentally unfair or an unreliable vehicle for determining the defendant's guilt or innocence. The only way to ensure that a jury is unbiased and unprejudiced is to allow peremptory strikes during voir dire, and it allows the attorneys to detect and eliminate bias, as I've said. In granting the state an additional peremptory challenge, gave an unfair advantage to the state in shaping the jury, and jeopardized my client's chance of receiving a fully impartial jury. It was the unfair advantage that implicated my client's constitutional right to an impartial jury. And his due process right was violated as well. This reconstitution of the jury happened at a point where it was not predictable. There was no notice of this change, and nothing could have been done in response to it. The error was preserved. He repeatedly objected, trial counsel did, before, during, and after the change was made. The error just simply cannot be subjected to the traditional harmless error analysis, because prejudice cannot be determined. And it would be unfair to require the person that objected to it to prove that it was prejudicial. The only way to adequately protect a defendant's right to an impartial jury that the Ohio Constitution says should be inviolate is to rule that when the state is permitted to exercise more than its allotted number of peremptory challenges in a criminal prosecution, that circumstance must be considered structural error. If there are no further questions, I would ask that the court answer the certified question in the affirmative. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel?
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor, Associate Justices, Mr. Hoffman. May it please the court. My name is Alex Havlin. I'm here as an assistant prosecutor with Hamilton County here on behalf of the state of Ohio. The state of Ohio is asking this court to adopt the reasoning of the First District Court of Appeals. And
counsel, let's talk about that.
Sure.
Paragraph 37 shows that the First District's opinion shows that, quote, Jones also must demonstrate that the error affected the outcome of the proceeding, close quote. That's incorrect, isn't it? The government has the burden in the if harmless error.
Yes, correct.
So the court below was wrong.
Yes.
You want us to affirm an incorrect appellate decision.
In terms of the structural error question.
Let's assume arguendo harmless error. Where did the government carry its burden to show the prejudice, that there was no prejudice?
So going back to some of the questioning that was asked to Mr. Hoffman, the juror in question that ultimately sat, Roland was the name. He was passed for cause by Jones. Not only was he only passed for cause, because he was an alternate juror, Jones was afforded his right to a peremptory challenge for the alternate. That was also declined. I don't know what else we
can. But both the trial court and the appellate court put the burden on the defendant to show no prejudice. To show prejudice. Correct?
I believe that's correct, yes.
So they were wrong.
Yes. I think even if I don't think it that part was wrong. Correct, Your Honor.
Question about the defendants required to demonstrate prejudice, which is in the question of proposition of law, is incorrect. It's the government's obligation.
Sure. And frankly speaking, I didn't craft that proposition either. I opposed the certification for conflict. And I certainly have no problem addressing that it can be our burden to demonstrate that the error was harmless. I don't think that's a problem in this case, and I don't think it's as big of a problem. When you look at the momentum of these cases recently, they all tend away from that sort of default position of, well, prejudice would be difficult to show, so we will presume it. That is no longer the case when you look at Rivera and some of the other state courts that have addressed this issue. I think getting back to just the question of whether this is structural error, I still believe that this is not. This court has said that a threshold issue for determining whether an error is structural is whether that error is of constitutional dimension. I don't believe that the appellant can demonstrate that in this case, and I think that can end our inquiry.
Counselor, do you read Holloway to say there was structural error in that case?
I do not, Your Honor. The structural error analysis wasn't even argued below by either of the parties. It was sort of injected into the decision by the court The First District.
The First District. Is there, unless I missed, is there anywhere in Holloway that mentions structural error?
No.
I mean, is there a true conflict here between the First and the 10th?
I did oppose a certification below. The results, I believe, are in conflict. I don't know why the Holloway Court didn't include a structural error analysis. They reached the same result that's compelled by structural error. I'm not certain why that wasn't included in their analysis.
Well, they said the violation of Criminal Rule 24 in Holloway.
Correct. And I don't believe that a violation of a criminal rule suffices for per se reversal. So I think the result they reach is one that's appropriate for structural error. They do not show that work, so to speak, below. And Jones, the First District, explains that it's announced without reference to structural error or constitutional error. Assuming that there is still a conflict, I believe appellant cannot show that there's constitutional error present in this case. In terms of the federal constitution, these questions are answered by Rivera and Ross. Rivera and Ross both say there is no Sixth Amendment right that's implicated because this jury was ultimately impartial. There's no due process right. And appellant concedes in his merit brief that this must find shelter under the Ohio Constitution. The only argument that's raised in terms of the Ohio Constitution is the right to an impartial jury. As many of the questions that have already been asked have demonstrated, this jury was impartial that decided his case. Peremptory challenges are but one means to the end of an impartial jury, because the jury that tried and convicted Jones was impartial. That ends the inquiry there. Even if there should be some constitutional question, I don't believe this is still structural error because, as was mentioned by this court in Murphy, a juror's erroneous excusal does not compromise the jury's impartiality. That's sort of a circular discussion when we look to whether or not it's constitutional and then whether it's structural, even assuming there's a constitutional error. The ultimate impartiality of this jury was the question. That ends it. It was impartial. There's no constitutional problem, and I don't think he can demonstrate that it rendered this an unreliable vehicle for determining the case.
Counsel, did you say that the dismissal of a juror can never be structural? Did I hear you?
No. No,
would you repeat the point you were making?
That the erroneous dismissal does not render the subsequent jury impartial. That even though there's an error in dismissing. So in Murphy, I believe the juror was dismissed.
Well, that's not a blanket rule that an erroneous dismissal doesn't render it
impartial.
Not impartial. Right? Not impartial.
The direct quote is, does not compromise the jury's impartiality.
Okay, all right. But if there's a systemic elimination of African Americans from a jury.
Certainly, that would be a Batson question. I'm not saying that, no. Just this, the Murphy case, it was the
okay,
juror.
Okay, you're just saying it was just a mistake. There was no underlying prejudice or racial motivation, or you're just saying somebody goofed.
Right, a mistake. So in that case, I believe it was the juror had personal obligations. In this case, it was an error in arithmetic. So
as long as that can be shown that the mistake had no underpinnings of a constitutional violation.
Correct, yes. Okay. I'm not making that
but
any broader
when
than
you
it
said it's circular or circuitous, I mean, your counsel would say that this does rise to that type of it reflects the constitutional right to a fair and impartial jury, even though it's just a goof.
Sure. I think for guidance, you can look to the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court decision in Rivera. They, in that decision, Justice Ginsburg says this wasn't a systematic denial of this right to this defendant. This was a one-time error. And I think the Rivera decision leaves open perhaps that next case where there is a systematic denial of this right. That's not the present case we're here on today. So I don't, that's the reason it doesn't implicate the due process clause. If there are no further questions, I would simply ask that this court find that the error below was not structural and is therefore subject to harmless error review.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel?
Please, the court, very briefly. The rule of law in Holloway, the rule of law was equal to a structural error analysis, and therefore it presents a direct conflict with State versus Jones. A violation of Criminal Rule 24 can overlap and also constitute a constitutional violation, particularly under the Ohio and United States constitutions. And this error is definitely not systematic. It's very few cases on this particular situation, but a conflict is presented. I'm asking the court to resolve the conflict under the Constitution and as it's empowered to, and find that my client's right to a fair jury has been implicated. If there are no further questions, I ask the court to answer the certified question in the affirmative. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.